Right.
Good afternoon. I'll call to order the meeting of the State Government Budget Division for Wednesday, January 31st, 2007. Let the record reflect we have a quorum present. Today we're going to be looking at the Racing Commission, the Gambling Control Board, and the Minnesota State Lottery. And members, you can find the governor's recommendations towards the back, on the tabs in the back of your budget books. We'll start with the Racing Commission, and welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dick Kruger, the Executive Director of the Racing Commission. With your permission, Mr. Chair, what I'll do is give a brief overview of the operation of the commission and what our role is at Canterbury Park and what anticipated role will be at the new racetrack when it opens sometime next year. And then I'll briefly discuss the governor's budget as far as the initiative that he has recommended. It's going to be very similar to the overview of the policy committee, Mr. Chair, so some of you have heard part of this before.
It's the only members from the policy committee, Senator Rest, who's left, Senator Roebling is on the policy committee, Senator Pappas and I, and I'm the only one who's heard this before, so this is going to be new to the others.
Mr. Chairman, the commission itself is comprised of 9 members. They all serve 6-year terms. 3 of the members' terms expire every 2 years. They do serve with confirmation. I do have a handout in addition to the overhead. Page 1 of the handout details the statutory authority that is granted to the commission under 240.03 of the statute. Page 2 of the handout delineates the primary responsibilities that the commission has in applying the authority that the legislature has granted to them. The primary ones being the issuance of Class A and Class B licenses. A Class A license is a license stipulated in legislation for the ownership of a racetrack. The license is in 240.10, and it's $253,000 a year. The Class B license is a license to run a pari-mutuel race meet at a licensed Class A facility. And again, that license fee is stipulated in 240.10 and is $500 times a live racing day assigned by the commission and $100 times each simulcast day. Those are the receipts, in addition to the occupational license fees that we collect, that make up the direct appropriations that the legislature makes for operation of the commission. We also issue Class C occupational licenses, which are licenses the legislature requires everyone who works at the racetrack, races a horse at the racetrack, provides a service to the racetrack to be licensed, meaning they go through a detailed license application process. We fingerprint everybody at least 5 years as required by statute, and we go through a background investigation on all of those licensees. Last year, the commission issued just over 4,100 licenses. 2,200 of those were issued to Minnesota residents, and the balance of the licenses were issued to folks from 43 other states, as well as Canada, Mexico, and England. The statute also defines a Class D, a pari-mutuel license, which is a license that can be granted to county agricultural associations to race pari-mutuelly county fair event. And we have had only one county fair to do that. It's Traverse County Fair in Wheaton. And they raced from 1994 pari-mutuelly through 2001. The commission staff and budget, looking at the organizational chart, we have 8.3 full-time equivalent positions. Our fiscal six appropriated special revenue fund expenditures total $462,000, and that is on the last page. last page of the handout in our fiscal 2007 special revenue fund budget is $670,000. You should see that number on the governor's budget pages.
But let me just ask, I'm just noticing this. In each of the fiscal years, when you look at the totals for the appropriations as opposed to the expenses, they're fairly close, but for FY06, it's $732,000 appropriations, $462,000 expenses. I'm not sure I understand the why there's a gap there. The other years seem to line up fairly closely. I'm not sure what the why there was a change.
What's happened, Mr. Chairman, when we worked on our annual budget request 2 years ago, and we did our revenue estimates with the Department of Finance, assuming that the new racetrack in Anoka County was going to run a live race meet in 2006.
Okay.
They did not.
Right.
Obviously, they did not do it, but they still paid us the statutory license fees for the A license, which is $253,000. It was a lesser amount last year because they were allowed by the legislature to reduce their license fee based upon unexpended balance that we had in an interim license fee back in 2005. So what's happened is we're appropriated much more than we actually spent, and the money that's going to carry forward, Mr. Chairman, you know, forms the basis for the initiative that we did submit to the Department of Finance and has been included in the governor's budget.
Okay, thank you.
Go to pages 5 and 6, just to talk about the handle. Summary of the handle.
Going back to 1985.
And I know 2 years ago when I testified, I was able to say to the legislature that, you know, the racetrack through 2004 has had modest increases in handle, and that it's what happens at Canterbury Park that the state's horsemen and women make their decisions about bloodstock.
You're to invest in it. Yeah, your voice is cutting in and out. Could you move the microphone just a little closer? I don't know if they're picking up. Thank you. Yeah.
And it's what happens at Canterbury Park that the state's horsemen and women make their decisions as to the bloodstock investments that they want to make and hopefully race out of Canterbury to get a return on that investment. But as you can see, 2005 and 2006, the handle has begun to decline. It's down about 8.5%. last year from where it was in 2004. And the analysis we've done that probably 90-95% of that is due to folks betting on the internet, where they're not coming out to Canterbury and they're sitting at home in their family rooms and betting on the internet. You know, also I discovered, Mr. Chairman, that, you know, once folks have started to do that, they've also found out that they can play poker on the internet. So that is also rated the problem was folks not going to Canterbury.
And just for the members' information, 1993 was when it was closed down because of the change of ownership and so forth. Is that just so you can explain what the gap between 92 and 94?
You can see that, Mr. Chairman, you can see that the handle from 1990, from 82.8 million down to, just looking at the live handle now.
Right.
82.8 million down to 17.8 million. That 92 meet, we just got by in that meet, not only from a Canterbury standpoint, but from a regulatory standpoint. When you have good purses and you have good horses, you have good horsemanship. We ran into a few problems during 92, but the owners of the racetrack at that time had requested the commission to allow them to simulcast only in 93. I don't know if you remember those discussions or not, Senator, but
I was here.
And then to race, skip a year of live racing, but the commission voted not to do that. So during 93, they pursued sale of the racetrack, which they did accomplish at the end of 93. They sold it to Irwin Jacobs, who held on to it for about a month and a half, and then sold it to the Sampson family and Dale Shinian. They began simulcasting in 94 and then ran a live race meet and simulcasting in 95.
Sir Larson, do you have a question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Kruger. Can you tell us, I'm not recalling, what year the card club was passed and what your analysis is as it relates to that's ability to help racing?
That is farther on in my presentation, sure. But the 99 legislature passed the card club legislation, and I'll go over that briefly, Senator Larson. In addition to the 8.3 FTEs that the commission has, which is funded by the direct appropriations from the legislature, we also have two other primary staff functions during live racing that are funded from statutory appropriations, which is found in 240.155, the reimbursement procedures and accounts. There's two different areas of staff function. One is the stewards. By law, the stewards are the highest-ranking racing officials at the racetrack. There must be three presiding over every race meet, two of which must be contracted or employees of the commission. One of those two must be the presiding steward. Stewards act as the referees during the running of a race. They're viewing the race as it's being run. They have video technology, whereby one of the stewards is watching the race from four different angles in real time as it's being run. Something should happen during the running of the race, an infraction of some sort, either between horses or jockeys. The stewards will post the inquiry and do a replay, very similar to what you see in the NFL. They make a decision based upon the incident that may or may not have occurred. They can consult with the jockeys in the winner's circle. And in some cases, they will disqualify a horse. And in those cases, the steward's decision is final. Legislature has also given the stewards judicial powers in that they conduct hearings, they take sworn testimony, they issue findings of fact, or conclusions, and an order. And the legislature has given them authority to fine individuals up to $2,000 and to suspend licenses up to 90 days. The other major staff function during live racing is the veterinary program. And this is where the commission's focus is on animal husbandry. When a horse goes to the gate, we want that horse to be in its top condition. We don't want it to have any medication in its system. The horse comes on the track, the veterinarians create a medical record for that horse. They created over 1,500 records last year. Those records are updated after each race, should a horse sustain an injury, or in some cases a horse will get sick, and they will examine those horses. In Minnesota, we conduct pre-race exams every day. They do the morning rounds and look at every horse that is going to race that day. Last year, they conducted just under 5,600 pre-race exams, and they observe the horses further in the paddock. Post-parade just prior to the race. The result of those exams last year, summer, placing of 238 horses on the vets list, which means a horse does not race again until it has performed a workout under the visual supervision of the commission's vets. We also have a medical testing program, which is administered through the chief veterinarian's office. Medical testing laboratory is in Truesdale Laboratory in Tustin, California. We take custody of those. Two horses have to be tested in every race, one of which has to be the winner. We take custody of those horses at the winner's circle, keep them under our visual observation the whole time they're in the test barn, while blood and urine are being taken from those horses. We seal the test tubes under the with a representative of the owner or trainer present, and twice a week we ship those samples off to Truesdale Lab for testing. Last year over 3,000 samples were sent, and we had 52 violations, all of which were handled by the stewards with disciplinary rulings.
Any
Under Statute 240.18, the legislature has charged the commission with administering the Minnesota Breeders Fund program. The legislature has authorized a tax of 1% of the handle to be deposited in the Breeders Fund, and monies are used as financial incentives to promote the breeding and racing of horses. We take about $30,000 or $32,000 of that money to administer the program. After that, 20% by statute is set aside for equine research dedicated for the School of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Minnesota. There are other programs we can use that money for as well, like substance abuse programs on the backside and public information, commission activities in the breeding industry. After that, 20% is extracted from the fund. The remaining 80% goes back to the owners and breeders of racehorses. We are estimating that to be $1.2 million for each year. Legislation authorizing a Class A licensed facility to operate a card club. It's passed in the 99 session. After live racing in 99, Canterbury Park began composing their fall of 1999, we met with them, reviewing the plan prior to submitting the plan to the commission for approval. In that process, we included myself and my staff, commissioners if they were able to attend, police officers from the Shakopee Police Department, and special agents from the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division. Go over that background because we will use the same protocol when we review the card club plan of operation for the new racetrack in Anoka County. Although at that location, we'll invite in police officers from Forest Lake Police Department. I assume Forest Lake has a police department, and the sheriff's office for Anoka County. The commission approved the plan of operation at its meeting in January of 2000. The plan included the essential details as required by the legislature. It included overall policies for security, surveillance, internal controls. The games to be played, hours of operation, collection of rake amounts, dealer and dealing procedures, patron and employee licensee conduct in the cartage. Page 8 of the handout, you can see that the rake for 2006 was just over $30.1 million. Of that amount, they set aside over $4 million for purses, and of that amount, $4 million, they paid $452,000 to the Racing Commission to be used for purse supplements for Minnesota-bred racehorses. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude my overview. I did go through a brief chronology of the North Metro project when I was in front of the policy committee. I don't know if you would like that at this time or not, or if you would like to.
I think that to the extent, you've alluded to it, obviously members have questions about it, but I believe that does that explain some of the differences in the expenditures that you're anticipating within the next biennium? They're going up, and that looks like that's the result. Is that what's causing it?
That's correct. Mr. Chairman, the legislature 2 years ago did appropriate operating monies to us to be out at that racetrack, because at the time we were here 2 years ago, we assumed, which was 2005, we had assumed, based on their testimony to the commission, that they were going to race a live race meet in 2006. So we included all of our estimates in the governor's biennial budget. Because of litigation that was brought against the commission by a group called the Columbus Concerned Citizens. Two pieces, one of alleging the commission violated the open meeting law, and the second one was just questioning the commission's review and approval process for the Class A and the B license. That held up the whole project in its entirety. We did prevail on both of those suits in the Court of Appeals. But that held up the project for literally 2 years until 2 weeks ago. They did have their groundbreaking out in Columbus Township. So the monies were appropriated to us. They're in our base for the next biennium. On top of that, now we do have an initiative that has been supported by the governor to upgrade our information technology capabilities, which were amply pointed out in the program evaluation audit that the legislative auditor did in the fall of 2004 and released the report in 2005. I believe that Senator Rest was chair of the LAC at that time.
Members, I've asked to have the technology requests put into each section of your book so that if you want to see, because as I indicated the other day, all those requests were in a different book, but I figured that as long as we're looking agency by agency, we should have the computer requests in with the governor's recommendations, so we can see the whole thing. If you look on page 6 regarding the Racing Commission, their part of it, under background, I think the second paragraph says additional funding for information technology will allow the Racing Commission to upgrade its 4 data processing systems in order to address deficiencies identified in the 2004 Legislative Auditor Program Evaluation. Mr. Kruger, though, I am not familiar with it. What were some of the deficiencies that they identified, and how will this recommended appropriation for computer upgrades assist you in achieving rectifying those deficiencies? I don't know what deficiencies were identified, so I don't know how this takes care of that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure how to answer that question. I haven't looked at that report now in some time, but they made a general finding of all of our systems, especially the parimutuel system. And that thing's about 10 years old. Parimutuel system, our licensing system, our vet system, and our breeders' fund system. They're all standalone. We have separate contractors on small contracts to come in and at least maintain the systems for us. But we had discussed with them upgrade of the parimutuel auditing system, for instance, Mr. Chairman, where we want the parimutuel system to talk to the breeders' fund system so we can reduce the dual data entry that we're currently doing, because both systems rely on the same betting data, the handle data that we get from the racetracks. I also discussed with them that once we do that, that it would be great for us if we could get our software set up so that we could download the information right from the track tote systems, rather than to get their paper copy of their betting by track every day by pool. We could get it configured to the data that we need to audit the handle to make sure that they're making the correct payments to us for the parimutuel tax, not just for the general fund, but as important to the Minnesota Breeders Fund, that the money gets allocated correctly by breed between thoroughbreds, quarter horse, and standardbreds, and Arabians. Which Canterbury has raced Arabians on occasion. And another issue has come up. I've discussed it briefly with Senator Rest. We're members of the Association of Racing Commissioners International, and they have formed a subsidiary called Wagering Integrity Services, which is an independent wagering real-time monitoring service that they are providing to the states. That is not built into our initiative. As a matter of fact, I didn't even have the cost figures on that until last week. But if we don't have any money left out of this initiative, if you're going to be kind enough to appropriate that to us, I may be back next year asking for $35,000 to set the system up, and $34,000 a year to have the ongoing monitoring of the system. There have been a number of instances where, I don't know if any of you recall the pick six scandal that occurred during the Breeders' Cup.
I don't know if I do.
2002?
What did you?
In 2002,
yeah.
It was a gaping hole in the tote system that the industry had been assured wasn't there, but it was. One of their employees took advantage of it, and since then, they've assured us that, you know, these types of situations will be taken care of, but we continue to see betting irregularities. The latest one was in a pick three at Tampa Bay Downs. So the Association of Racing Commissioners International, which is comprised of all the states that have pari-mutuel racing, is pursuing this now, and that's part of what I want to, the commission wants to incorporate into our upgraded pari-mutuel auditing system. And at the same time, tie it to both racetracks. There's a new position in the initiative that we probably won't need if we can get this upgrade completed. I should let the committee know that we have started to recruit an information technologist position who will be our project manager for the evaluation of all of our four systems, work with us on developing requests for proposal if we have to bring in outside programmers, because we do have the money available this year. I at least want to get that done. I think we can have that done by the end of June this year. So we're already starting to work on and focus on this initiative.
So is security an issue with some of your computer systems?
Would you repeat that, please,
security,
Mr. Chairman?
Security, is that an issue with your computer systems, is security?
The security is not, you know, the tote computer area at the racetrack is in a secured area.
Okay.
You got to have a code to get in. You got to punch numbers on the door.
Hackers? Can anybody have access to that?
Well, that's, Mr. Chairman, that's what we're trying to get at.
Pick six. Okay. Questions? Senator Warburg.
Thank you. I was just wondering, when you said that we had appropriated money anticipating the Columbus track coming online, and then it didn't, but you had the series of legal battles. Is that where money ended up going then? Did you use up those funds for those purposes, or what happened?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, no. North Metro Harness has paid us just over $610,000 in license fees. And those monies were deposited in a control account in the Special Revenue Fund. And we actually took in less than what the legislature appropriated. And I'm estimating that of that money, by the end of this fiscal year, we will have spent somewhere between $130,000 and $150,000. So most of that money is still there, which carries forward to this biennium, which is the basis for the initiative that we submitted to the Department of Finance. No, we did not spend that money.
Sir Roebling, if you look at their handout on the very last page, they have the fiscal years from 2001 to 2006. And if you look at 2006, they had appropriation of $732 million. And then, but the expenses were only $462 million. And, you know, I'd asked a little earlier about that, and that was a difference. They had expected expenses relating to the Anoka County racetrack, which didn't occur because of the litigation and things that delayed it. So, and apparently that's going to carry forward. It'll still be spent, but they had the money, but they couldn't spend it on the Anoka County one yet because of that. So.
Mr. Chairman, it doesn't carry forward. We have to get it.
We have to get back. Reappropriation. I'm sorry. Okay. Other questions? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Krueger, I wanted to bring your attention back to page 5 of your handout on Canterbury Park handles, and you compare the simulcast figures with live races. And there does appear to be a, despite the fact that you have two venues for betting, it does appear that the numbers are going down in volume. Now, is this just the gross receipts? Is that what we're looking at here?
That's correct. This is a gross receipts. Well, wait a minute. This is the total money that's bet through the windows at Canterbury Park on both live racing and simulcasting.
And
it's the gross gambling handle. Of that, Canterbury takes out 17% on the straight pools and 23% on the exotic pool. So it's a blended rate of about 20%. which is their receipts to pay their taxes, pay their purses, and pay their costs of operation.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Krueger, is your overhead on that operation, is that stagnant, or is it going up or going down? Does the cost of doing business out there, does it remain relatively flat?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, you're talking about the Racing Commission's overhead?
Well, I was focusing on Canterbury Park in reference to their expenses versus their handle on these figures that you've presented to us. These are gross receipts. Do we have a list of their expenses?
That's gross betting handle, but it also affects Canterbury's revenue, which is down about 8.5% from where it was in 2000. Well, what I did, Senator Limmer, I went in and I compared the 10-Q that Canterbury files with the SEC, and I looked at the third quarter ending 2006, the third quarter ending 2005, and their net income was down about 8.5%, about $2 million. So this decline in their betting handle has affected their operating revenues.
Yeah, and Senator, Mr. Krueger had indicated there's some competition from the Internet on betting.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair, I was in the room and I heard that. However, at Canterbury, they also have a card club.
That's correct.
And that's not represented on the Canterbury Park handle form that's presented on your screen. Is there a reason why that wouldn't be added on to these figures and represented as total gross receipts?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, the parimutuel data is the betting handle. Page 9, the handle was the rake that Canterbury takes. That's Canterbury's gross receipts from the card club. It's extremely difficult to estimate what the total betting handle is in the card room. Because if we're all sitting around playing poker, I may bring $100 to the game when I sit down, but during the course of the evening, I'm probably going to have bet $1,000 because I win some, I lose some, I win some, I bet it back. And there's no paper trail because it's all chips. With the parimutuel handle, it's you make a bet, you get a tote ticket.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Krueger, there's card clubs in other places in the country. They Las Vegas has card clubs. Do they have a standard that they use to audit their take as far as the house is concerned? And do we use similar measures, perhaps at the end of a game or end of an evening? Or how would one arrive at these numbers if it's difficult to ascertain?
Mr. Chairman,
Berger.
Senator Limmer, at the end of each shift, day shift, swing shift, and grave, the drop boxes that are on the tables are taken off the tables, put on a cart, an empty box is put on it for the beginning of the next shift. They then go down to the count room, the office level of Canterbury Park, and the chips are counted. And they're done under surveillance cameras. They're escorted down by security. They fill out their cash inventory, chip inventory forms, and that all gets turned over to accounting. I don't know how much more detail. We don't participate in the count. We do observe the count on occasion. We have surveillance cameras in our office to review the count room as well as any other place in the facility.
Mr.
But it's very similar to other casinos and card clubs around the country.
Mr. Krueger, in the graph that's described there, card club rake, is that specifically at Canterbury?
Yes, Senator Limmer.
Would it be okay, or would it be a better representation to add these figures on to the park handle, or are they measuring two separate two different things altogether.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, they're apples and oranges. Paramutual is a handle. Canterbury's receipts from the handle is about 20%. The rake on this chart is Canterbury's receipts from the card club. The total handle in poker is very difficult to determine, but if you assume that rake of $30 million is 10% of what's bet, you've got a $300 million handle during the course of a year up in the poker room. My observation is it's probably closer to $350 million, but that would be the only way you could make an estimate as to what the handle poker room is.
Other questions of the Racing Commission? Appears to be none. Thank you, Mr. Kruger. We'll be looking at the recommendations as we prepare the a part of the budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are we done with the overhead now?
The next up is the Gambling Control Board. Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Tom Barrett. I'm the Director of the Gambling Control Board. And similar, if it's all right with the committee, I'd like to go a brief overview of what our agency does as it relates to lawful charitable gambling. Ahead of the committee, you should have received a copy of our most recent annual report.
Well, I believe we have one distributed, members, and, yes.
I just point that out, a small packet, but filled with lots of information, statistics going back a number of years as far as the trends that are going on in charitable gambling. And then a few weeks ago, we distributed what we call a financial summary report. It's a detailed report showing all the activity at each one of the lawful gambling sites around Minnesota. And that's another helpful bit of information for the committee members. But if it's all right with you, I'd just proceed with a quick overview and then answer some of the questions after the presentation.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The Gambling Control Board's mission is twofold. One, obviously to ensure to the citizens the integrity of the games and the industry, the people that are dealing with the charitable gambling. And second, that the nonprofit organizations are involved and raise funds for charitable contributions, be it youth hockey, fire relief, veterans programs. What are the five forms of lawful gambling? We have pull tabs, the bread and butter of the industry, bingo, paddle wheels, tip boards, and raffles. And I stop here and I highlight paddle wheels. That's not the riverboat type paddle wheel. That's the Wheel of Fortune type paddle wheel that we see out there. Now, what do we not regulate? We don't have anything to do with the lottery, even though we work close with those folks. Tribal casinos, we don't have any say over that operation. Horse, as you just heard from Mr. Kruger, illegal internet sports type betting. While we don't have any connection with that, that's handled by public safety. We do work close with that agency as it relates to that kind of activity because it does affect charitable gambling. But the reason I pointed out is we're known as the Gambling Control Board. A lot of times people assume we regulate all the gambling, and we don't. Who do we regulate, though, in terms of the who regulates it? We have a 7-member citizens board. 5 are appointed by the governor. 1 is appointed by the Commissioner of Public Safety, and 1 is appointed by the Attorney General. I have a staff of 32 full-time equivalents, and we're divided out under licensing, compliance, which pretty much makes up the auditing side, investigations, and then administration. How do we regulate it? Number of ways. Anybody that is involved with lawful gambling, for the most part, is licensed, whether it's the nonprofit organizations, the gambling managers that are required to be working with the nonprofit, the manufacturers that produce the product, the distributors that deliver the product, and something relatively new called Link Bingo vendors, specifically tied to a Link Bingo game. We license those folks as well. We also do education training. Each gambling manager that's licensed is required to attend training, pass a test, and every year thereafter attend continuing education classes and the changes. We also approve and test games before they go onto the street. Last year, approximately 340 new games per month went through our review, roughly over 4,000 new games per year, just by indication of the volume. The big piece of what we do is the regulatory audits and site inspections, where we visit the sites that the gambling's taking place. We'll meet with the nonprofit organizations and review their reports. And finally, if we have some issues that need their attention, we do have the opportunity to issue fines, sanctions to maintain the integrity of the games. The industry we regulate, right now there's over 3,300 gambling sites, charitable gambling sites in Minnesota, 1,400 organizations, each one of those have a gambling manager. Last year we issued over 2,400 exempt and excluded permits. These are small gambling type activities like a church raffle, something like that. We're tracking approximately just over 13,000 paid gambling employees. We have two linked bingo vendor or game providers, 14 distributors located throughout Minnesota, and then we license 10 manufacturers. Only one of those 10 have their manufacturing plant within the borders of Minnesota. Some of the numbers, charitable gambling. Last year, $1.3 billion in gross receipts. Minnesota ranks number one in the country as it relates to this form of lawful gambling. Obviously, with that kind of size, Minnesota ranks number one when it comes to the taxes in terms of deposits to the state for the activity. As it relates to our regulatory budget, though, we're at 2.6, and we're one of the smallest in comparison to other states of that size for tracking, monitoring the activity. The five forms, where does the, obviously you can see from this chart, the bulk is the pull tabs, 93% of the business. Bingo at only 5%, but still over $64 million was wagered last year when it came to bingo activity. And as you can see, raffles, $6 million, paddle wheels, $16 million. And tip boards, $8.5 million. Lottery versus charitable, with all due respect to our counterparts at the lottery, but they, I believe they had a record year last year when it came to gross receipts, big Powerball jackpots. But in comparison, they had $450 million in gross receipts compared to charitable gambling of the $1.3 billion. I think a lot of people don't realize that all those little pull tab booths certainly add up around the state of Minnesota. Where does the money go? 81% of it goes right back to the player in the form of prizes. Taxes makes up approximately 4%. Charitable contributions, also 5%. Bulbal expenses for the products, the salaries for the sellers, roughly $123 million, 10%. And then again, our budget, which our budget is all funded 100% through fees collected for the industry that we regulate. A symbolic gesture of... If you took that 100 pennies for a cost of a pull tab, our portion of that is one-fifth of one of those pennies in terms of our staffing and the regulatory budget. Issues and concerns. I'll touch briefly on some of the staffing ratios that we have with the Gambling Control Board. Expense limits, one of the issues that is a mounting concern for the board. The impact from a smoking ban and what's going on in that realm as it relates to charitable gambling. I'll give you to try the short version of the year in review of what we've done and then where we're going in the near future. But briefly, the staffing ratios, right now we have approximately one investigator for every 1,300 sites, and I can use the comparison of there's one game warden for every 1,300 lakes. You as a fisher person, would you keep that extra walleye, maybe go over the limit? That's a concern, but at the same time, we work very well with the industry in terms of the penalties that could be implied if they're doing something wrong. But gives you an idea of the investigator ratio. We have one compliance specialist for every nearly 200 sites or 83 organizations. These are folks that are auditing the records, doing the site visits for each one of those sites. Our hope is to get to an audit cycle of once every 2 years, and we're not there yet. It's roughly 2.4 right now, but we're improving. We also have one licensing specialist for every 3,100 permits that are issued. Tremendous volume that goes through when you add up all the small raffles and the like. Expense limits for charities. This is an issue that is mounting. Charities are having some issues maintaining their expense calc. Under current law, they're allowed to spend up to 60% of the net profits on expenses. If by chance they're running a bingo operation with a little more labor, they're allowed to spend up to 70%. Unfortunately, we're tracking roughly 300 organizations, 23% of those licensed charities are at or exceeding the expense limits right now. Now, currently the penalties we would consider to be somewhat minimal if an organization is overspending. That was one of the issues raised in the program evaluation by legislative order as well as our own board's activities in dealing with some of these organizations and how they're spending their money. And so one of the initiatives we'll be coming back this session is to try to strengthen those that issue related to organizations that are overspending. And as I said, we're proposing that to hopefully address that issue, and you'll probably hear more of that in the near future. Impact from a smoking ban, obviously this has been an issue, but I want to say up front that the board's neutral on the position. But when this came to light and we started seeing some of the jurisdictions pass changes, restrictions, we also noticed that there was an impact as relates to charitable gambling. So we began to track those numbers, not as an advocate for or against, but more of a cautionary to those charities that are involved in areas that have a smoking ban that appears to be have an impact on the gross receipts. And as such, they would need to be mindful of that and make changes, whether it's expenses or, you know, they might not have enough to spend or as much as they had before for the charitable, the bottom line. Right now, statewide gross receipts are down approximately 5%. By comparison, in the municipalities that we've been tracking, gross receipts are down anywhere from 14% to 100%. Today, the end of the January, we'll see in St. Paul, they will be closing the last bingo hall within the confines of the St. Paul city limits. By comparison, exempt sites, and I use the example that we have exempt sites in Hennepin County. Hennepin County previously had a complete ban, and they later modified that to say if you were a bar or restaurant that had greater than 50% of your receipts on the liquor side of things, you could request an exemption. For those locations that request an exemption, by comparison, those receipts are up 9%. Not very scientific, but I point out there appears to be some correlation when we talk about the bans as relates to charitable gambling. Briefly, the year in review. Happy to say our regulatory site inspections have increased. This is due in part to the fact that we had three additional positions allocated last budget cycle. We've done something new this past year. We call it Sweeps Week, but we've actually coordinated with our counterparts, Department of Public Safety and Department of Revenue, as it relates to getting out to these sites. This week we're conducting a sweep right now up in northwestern Minnesota. Unfortunately, some of the things when we get out there, we find illegal gambling. Tis the season with the Super Bowl going on and the illegal sports boards. We had a case down in southern Minnesota that had liquor coming across the border from Iowa. Those are some of the things, but I point out that we're coordinating. We're trying to avoid duplication, but it's a nice change of pace to say, okay, as a state group, we're going to go out and visit these sites. You might be reading about it in the paper the next couple of days that one of the sites had slot machines in their basement, fully operational. Cash shortages, lowest ever reported. This is going back to 1985. That's through the efforts working with the industry and the bar owners to modify some of the cash accounting, but it is the lowest we've seen since 1985. Link Bingo, those are involved last legislative session, were involved in this. This was a creative way without the expansion of gambling, but they worked with those organizations that are conducting bingo to literally link together. The same jackpot amount that they would give locally, they simply pool it together. It's not, by no means the size of any Powerball. I think the biggest jackpot thus far is about $2,700. But it's a way that the charities worked within the confines of the charitable gambling, lawful gambling laws to add a little more excitement and activity. And it's worked quite well. We did revise the rule book. It's right now currently sitting at the administrative law judge, but it's going to be easier to read, simplified, and much more easier for the organization involved to understand all the rules pertaining to lawful gambling. Ducks, cows, golf balls. I say this a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but again, last legislative session, there are changes done affecting the way a raffle is done. It's no more just the simple ticket and a drum. Rubber duck races was the hot flavor last session, and we've worked with the industry to find a way to allow some creativity but still maintain the integrity of a drawing where somebody could win money. From that, it allowed additional creative games. When we have golf ball drops where numbered golf balls are elevated above a golf course green, and the trap door is released. Whatever ball ends up in the hole or is closest to the hole wins. Cows, that's not a lawful form, but we're relating to cow bingo. We had some issues with the city of Mankato. We weren't aware, but they would literally send a cow out in the pasture, and if it did what it needed to do in a certain spot, it would win. But that's not legal, and I don't anticipate it yet.
What do you
little brevity to the overview. Location, location, location. This is, again, we know that the issue of the smoking ban is coming. And I think what we've seen is some of the inconsistency in terms of the regulation. And I point to a site in St. Paul where they've dropped over 75% in gross receipts. And on the same street, up about a half a mile in the city of Maplewood, another location has expanded their parking lot. So it does have to deal with location and some of the inconsistencies as it relates to the smoking ban. Looking ahead, we do have some initiatives we're considering and maybe come back before here, but we're looking at to ways to simplify some of the organization expenses and help them in that respect. Education requirements, going to modify that. Record retention, if we can find a way to save organizations where they don't need to retain all the records for the long period of time, we're looking at that. A technical change involving Link Bingo and no longer the need for a separate account. And whether or not there should be consideration to go clarify it as charitable gambling versus what is now in the statute books as lawful gambling. Automation, we're on the verge, hopefully, of getting our system upgraded. And if we can be lucky in that sense, the hope is that we could go to an online licensing application. We don't have that yet. It's pretty much all paper right now. Budget, I say no increase, no changes, but I was corrected by my executive budget officer. There is a small change strictly related to the salary supplement. So there is a slight increase, but it's related to the salary supplement. And then we will continue to keep a watchful eye as it relates to the impact of a smoking ban. Texas Hold'em, that activity is going on right now, and possibly other gambling proposals that might be on the works, be it sports boards. That seems to come around once every year as well. And finally, we'll continue, obviously, to maintain our mission. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I conclude the quick overview and stand for any questions as relates specifically to the budget.
All right. I've got a couple questions here, too. As I look at the governor's recommendations, you're looking for a 2% personnel compensation adjustment. And that's from the special review fund as opposed from the general fund. Is this something that can be sustained over time if we get a pay raise there from that fund?
Mr. Chairman and members, yes, we believe so. I mean, there is a concern with the decrease in activity. Now, if a statewide smoking ban was to take place, there's a concern with that anticipated. There'd be a drop. We know there's going to be a decrease in receipts. To the extent or how much, that could impact the operation. But at the same time, while the receipts would drop, there would still be a site, we think. We'd still see roughly the same number of organizations. But right now, all our funding for our operation is derived from licensing fees, and then there's a 0.1% fee that's tacked on to the gross receipts that come in from the charitable gambling.
You, at the end, you also mentioned an automated system. As I'm looking through there really doesn't seem to be a IT request for any new computers or anything. Is this something that's – are you able to – do your automated system with your current resources? It doesn't look like there's a request for anything new.
Correct, Mr. Chair. The money we got last budget cycle included an increase for new hardware. Prior to that time, we were actually getting some of our equipment from the lottery. Their surplus computers came our way. But that also was a factor in the program evaluation by the legislative auditor. What we had was pretty much a Chevy trying to talk to the Cadillac with our counterparts at Revenue. And so we've upgraded our system. The software as it relates to the licensing is what I'm referencing here, and that's all with funding that we currently have. We just haven't done the switchover.
So did the lottery give you a Chevy or a Cadillac or a Porsche, or what did they give you?
Mr. Chairman, it was put to good use.
Okay.
It was very good.
Senator Lieber?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Barrett, you made mention of an observation that ties with banning of tobacco use in buildings with the gambling activity going down. Do you have any have you created any type of projections in the event that the state would go put a tobacco ban statewide that would affect gambling activities? If we use your observations, it probably would follow all across. And then have you made any extrapolations on what type of revenue stream the state would lose in revenues from that gambling activity.
Mr. Barrett?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I'll say yes. We are tracking the impact, but there, I throw caution, by no means scientific. When the bans first started happening, they thought, well, they're not gambling at this site, they're going somewhere else. And so, yes, we do see some of the surrounding perimeters, whether it's a city or county, where there's been an increase in activity. But it all has to do with distance. Are they willing to travel that far to the other county border city to gamble? Or, in the example I gave between St. Paul and Minneapolis, it appears that, yes, or in the Hennepin County, those sites that were under total ban went to an exemption and increased. Those are the indicators we think, okay, by the inconsistency of a smoking ban enforcement, there's trade-offs. To go to a statewide ban, we're doing some scenarios, and I hesitate to say because it's by no means scientific, but the belief is that if a ban were to happen, it's going to change the behavior of the player. They're not sitting in the convenience right at the bar or the table constantly. They might need to go outside and take a smoke break, and by doing that, does that send them home or sooner or whatever? But we're trying to track for those sites that are in a geographic close area, what's been happening, and can we equate that to a statewide ban? The problem comes in when we see the Iowa border, where they have casinos right across the border or up in the North Dakota, or the tribal casinos here. The expectation is if it's somebody that wants to have fun as relates to gambling, there's also other venues that they would go there. So we have some information available that I'm certainly willing to share. I throw caution. We're trying to stay neutral. Our main message is to those charities, you know, if you're used to X amount of dollars raised from charitable gambling for the youth hockey or the fire relief veterans, and you're involved in a ban, the expectation is that it's going to decrease. Now, to the extent it goes 5, 10, 15, 20, St. Paul right now is down just over 30% in the city of St. Paul. We expect those numbers to maintain. Will they come back? That's an unknown. We're checking with some of the other states, state of New York, state of Washington, that also enacted statewide bans that also have charitable-type gambling. And the jury is still out in terms of that return of the ban. And maybe I took a long point around, but we are tracking some numbers. We expect them to go down. How much, we don't know exactly.
Chair,
Chair,
have you also noticed if the surrounding counties that do not have a tobacco ban, are they seeing a proportional increase by the is there a traffic pattern that one can measure? In order to get to a tobacco zone, they bring their gambling dollars with.
Mr. Baird.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, there's not a direct correlation. We have seen in Dakota County, Anoka County, Washington County increases, but also in Scott County, there's a decrease. So it's not consistent, and it's by no means a dollar for dollar. They lose, they gain.
Senator Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Barrett, did I hear you correctly that there's education and continuing education for the gambling managers?
Mr. Chair, Senator Youngberg, yes.
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, Mr. Barrett, does everybody or just the gambling manager have to go to that education?
Mr. Chair, Senator Youngberg, good question. The requirement is just the gambling manager that we license. Okay. But at the same time, we have new post commanders, veteran, or any organization, when they have a change of CEO, we encourage them to attend training. A lot of times the outgoing post commander might not relay what he's learned from the year in his post. And so it's open to anybody. And to the extent that we have an organization that might find itself in trouble, one of the regulatory opportunities we have is we can require those individuals that under terms of a consent order, you need to attend training. It's not required by law, but if they want to continue their gambling, we encourage them to take the training.
I got a question, Mr. Barrett. Maybe I should have asked it in the policy committee, but I can ask it here too. A few years ago, there was an issue that came out of American Legion post up in my area in Fridley, and I don't want to go into the details on that one, but basically the manager of the post kind of locked horns with the special agent who was investigating and felt that there was some heavy-handedness and so forth. But how should these organizations proceed? What they, I mean, they, a lot of them kind of feel they're at the mercy of the special agent, and if they feel the agent is going across the line, what do they do?
Mr. Chair, and I know the case you're referencing because it was an unfortunate situation where there were some issues with the sellers and the way they were conducting the game. And so the investigator actually, when we suspect there's illegal activity, we have the Gambling Control Board has the authority for any kind of a civil action, corrective measures. But when we get into a case and we suspect there's something of criminal nature, then we call our counterparts at Public Safety and work with them. They have the hidden cameras and a little more sophisticated equipment to help with the investigation. In this situation, we look towards when we suspect a site has some problems. The first question is, who can we trust if we need to get in there and get the equipment set up? And so we contacted who we thought we could work with in this case to get the equipment set up, unbeknownst to the sellers. And it wasn't shared with a lot. That's a situation. You don't want a lot of people to know what's going on until we have the hard evidence. But I think once reality came and what was going on and what we found, that's when some of the dominoes started falling as far as who should have been told or wasn't told. But to the heavy-handedness, one of the things we factor in when we have an organization that finds itself in trouble is how willing they are, how cooperative are they to help with the investigation, acknowledging there is a problem, and what can we do to fix the problem. And I know we had some issues because it really boiled down to the disbelief. We couldn't believe it would happen here, and this person is great and couldn't be doing that. But the reality, unfortunately, was the people that were involved there later admitted the guilt, surprised, unfortunate situation. But I know there was some factoring in terms of it shouldn't be this difficult when we have a problem to try to work through the problem and get them back on track. And I am happy to say they are back to gambling. They've served the suspension. But, yeah, it was a problem time for who we were dealing with at that particular site.
Thank you. Any other questions? Sir, we'll see.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Barrett, so cow plops are out, huh?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, yes, unfortunately. And people say, why? Again, it's a creative fund, and yet one of the things of our mission is maintain their integrity. I don't want to belabor it. But let's say you and I are in on this opportunity, call it an opportunity, but they release the cow, and I got my grid on the other side, and the cow's over by me, and I'm going to try and scare it over to my side. So it's those kinds of intervention that you say, you know what, no animals involved in gambling, no mouse, no cows. But I bring it up because it comes up every so often, and we're looked upon as the bad guys because, geez, it's fun. Why can't they make it legal? So
I have a serious question, too. A number of organizations have talked to me about, you know, their revenues may be $1 million gross revenue, and they're taking out their nets may be $60,000. And, you know, I see your payoff is like 81%, I think I saw in there, but they're saying they're paying taxes on the cards. There's a tax on that. You know, there's all these fees kind of add up. And so it really seems like a vehicle for the state to make some pretty good money off of, you know, their efforts. I think that's kind of a fair estimate of their feelings.
And Mr. Chair, yes, Senator Holstein, the government is one of the biggest recipients of charitable gambling, lawful gambling proceeds. Local, not just the state in the way of taxes, but the local unit of governments can also impose a 10% take, if you will, and that adds up as well.
Thanks. Senator Larson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and this question is a little bit along the lines of Senator Olsen's question as it relates to, I've been looking through, and I saw something earlier that I think estimated that about 4% of the costs of charitable gambling organizations is taxes. And as you're looking at the potential for, and as you're advising for the potential for the smoking ban, which, you know, depending on who you talk to, is potentially likely to pass here this year, next year, you know, are you looking at some potential proposals for doing something with tax relief, or, I mean, the groups that I'm particularly concerned about are service clubs that have narrow margins, and I want to compliment you. You've always been responsive to the concerns of the posts in my district, and we've worked together on that. But it seems to me that the smoking ban is likely at some point to go statewide, so it's less an if question. So then the question becomes, how do we help those organizations stay alive within the confines of how we currently distribute dollars?
Yep. Mr. Chair and Senator Larson, as relates to taxes, we would regulate the same regardless if there is a 10-12% tax or no tax. I mean, I believe the industry is considering proposing something to do with taxes decrease. I will say, as it relates to taxes, it is a complicated formula the way it's currently set up. We've explored some opportunities with revenue and the Department of Finance. If the opportunity is right, is there consideration, is the time right for what I would call tax reform? Now, there's something called a combined receipts tax. In the financial summary report, you can see the impact of that particular tax structure on some of the organizations. The more gross receipts they have, the more likelihood that they're going to fall under the escalating combined receipts tax. And so they're going to pay a higher percentage of their net receipts in that sense. But, as you pointed out, roughly, if you combine all the taxes paid against the gross receipts, it's still about 4%. Now, in comparable product, the lottery ticket, they have in lieu of tax rate of roughly 6.5%. So there's some inconsistencies, but yes, in terms of the impact of a smoking ban and less dollars to the bottom line, that's one of the concerns, but that'll probably come from the industry side, not from the board side. We would regulate it irregardless of the amount, but there is some discussion in that respect.
Well, Mr. Pellarson. Brief follow-up, Mr. Chair. Mr. Barrett, and what about on the payout side? How does that work? I mean, if you decrease the payout to the gambler, does that just deplete sales, or is there some ability to adjust there to provide some of these folks some additional revenue?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Barrett. Senator Larson, about it was 4 years ago now. There was never a limit, a minimum payout or maximum payout, I should say, until roughly 4 years ago, and it was first proposed at, I believe it was an 80%, and they lit it, or they set the maximum prize payout at 85. Now, by average, it's roughly 82%, so they're not even hitting the maximum, but we certainly heard from the industry representatives, the belief is that if you go much lower than the average or 85%, the implication is you're going to see a decrease in sales, and by decreasing sales, then you're going to hurt the net profit. So this is one really, I think, it's, you know, worth tempering. We encourage organizations, don't always play a high percent, play a mix, but monitor the bottom line. But the expectation is coming from the industry side. If you push that down, it doesn't necessarily mean an increase in the bottom line.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Well, I just have a final one, Mr. Barrett. You indicated Texas Hold'em is one of the issues you're kind of keeping an eye on. Just some advice. If the issue comes up, say, in central Minnesota around, say, the St. Cloud area, I'm sure if you contacted the mayor, Dave Kleiss, I'm sure that he'll give you all the assistance you want in policing it up there. So,
thank you.
Any further?
Well, thank you. Okay. Right?
We could make it an enforcement-free zone, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Enforcement-free zone, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like a job Z for gambling.
Job X. Okay, next is state lottery. And welcome to the budget division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I hope you can hear as we continue to enjoy some music. My name is Clint Harris. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota State Lottery. In April, the Minnesota State Lottery will celebrate 17 years of raising money for the state. Through December, over $6 billion in lottery tickets has been sold, almost $1.5 billion in lottery tickets has been in return to the state. Over $3.6 billion has been awarded in prizes, and our Minnesota retailers have earned over $365 million. Today, I'd like to touch on some of the major points of lottery operation and our proposed budget for the next biennium. You have our 2007 overview, which goes into a lot more detail than I'll be presenting today. As Mr. Barrett mentioned, what is it we don't do? First, let me make it clear. We do not sell pull tabs and other charitable gambling. We have nothing to do with racetracks or tribal casinos. We sell scratch-off and online lottery tickets. They're sold at more than 3,000 retailers around the state. This is not an easy job. We sell in a highly competitive and rapidly changing marketplace. Competition is more than just other gaming. It is every other impulse item sold at the store. We have to compete for shelf space and visibility. No retailer has to sell a ticket, and no player has to buy a ticket. It is a very different environment than that faced by other state agencies. We have been described as a business and a government wrapper. We offer two basic types of games, scratch and online. Last year, we introduced 42 new scratch games. Each retailer will have between 6 and 20 games on sale at any one time. Different players have different preferences for game themes, play styles, top prizes, prices, and they like new games especially. Online games have tickets that are generated by a computer terminal at the retailer that is connected to a central system. Powerball is the best-known online game, but not the only one. For all games, security is our first priority. Our security systems are extensive and subject to regular and outside audit. It is essential that players know the games can be trusted. Fiscal year 06 was our best sales year ever. We are unlikely to match that level in 07. 06 saw record Powerball jackpots of $340 million last October, a year ago October, and $365 million last February. The highest jackpot so far this year was $240 million. To give you some perspective, sales for the drawing for that drawing were a little over $3 million. For the $365 million drawing, sales were twice that much, at about $6 million. Sales are difficult to project. They depend heavily on things beyond our control, like gas prices, the state of the economy, and, as I've indicated, particularly the random nature of jackpots. Fiscal year 06 was our third straight record year for the money the lottery provided the state. Again, we're unlikely to match that total in 07 because of last year's record Powerball jackpots and because of a one-time $2.2 million windfall in 06 resulting from a legislative reallocation of unclaimed prize. But we do expect to continue the overall pattern of slow, steady growth we began in 2004. Our return so far this year is within 1% of the forecast we provided you last year. Here's how the lottery dollar is divided. The single biggest item is prizes. Without adequate prizes, no one would play. Finding that level that maximizes revenues to the state is an ongoing challenge. Last year, operating costs were 5% of revenue. Retailers earned about 6 cents on every dollar they sold. Contribution to the state. The lottery contributions to state programs is in several ways. Net proceeds are what a business would call profits. The Constitution guarantees that 40% of the proceeds will go to the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund through the year 2024. The rest now goes to the general fund, though that is at the discretion of the legislature. Players have a year to claim prizes. Any that are not claimed after that time go to the general fund. In fiscal year 06, that amounted to $7 million. As Mr. Barrett also mentioned, there is a 6.5% in lieu of sales tax on lottery tickets. Disposition of this is up to the legislature. It is currently split between the Game and Fish Fund, the General Fund, and the Natural Resources Fund, which is a fund that goes for state, metro, and local parks and trails and others, and the state's three zoos. Each biennium, the legislature makes an appropriation from the lottery fund to finance the Department of Human Services compulsive gambling program. This appropriation was $3.9 million for the current biennium. It is one of the best funded programs in the country, The lottery is the sole source of funding for this program. Every prize winner over 600, revenue we capture, every prize winner over 600 is checked for debts owed the state, including back taxes and child support. The lottery has collected over $2 million this way over the last 17 years. Prizes are subject to federal and state income taxes. In fiscal year 06, more than $2 million was withheld for Minnesota state income taxes alone. As a side note, there are several proposals before the legislature redirecting how some of this money is spent. I wanted to be clear that we do not take a position on these. Our job is simply to raise the money. Lottery governance. As you're aware, the lottery was authorized by voters in the 1988 election. It is operated by a director who is appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate. This position serves at the pleasure of the governor. Unlike other agencies, we do not receive a line item appropriation. Instead, the legislature establishes a spending limit. The limit covers administrative costs such as personnel, marketing, accounting, and data processing. It does not cover the cost of tickets, prizes, or retailer commissions. As you can see, this spending limit, the spending limit was $27.4 million for the current fiscal year. We're predicting that our actual operating expenses for 07 will be $26.2 million. Cuts in operating expenses have come from staff costs, advertising, promotion, and office space reductions. We will continue to invest when it will lead to increased revenues. As an example, we have invested in new scratch ticket dispensers, vending machines, and recently raffle games. Here you see is a history of our operating budget limit since it was first enacted in fiscal year 04. You'll note that the governor's recommendation for 09 represents less than a 3% increase over six years. As always, we will make every effort to operate below these levels. We understand that for every dollar that we do not spend on our operating expenses is a dollar that goes directly to the bottom line, to the general fund and the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund, something we're very cognizant of. Here's a history going back to the beginning of our operating expenses along with our projections for the next biennium. Operating expenses does not include prizes, as I've indicated, does not include prizes, retailer commissions, or the cost of producing and distributing tickets. These, of course, vary by the levels of sales.
Why was there a big drop-off?
Mr. Chair,
between 03 and 04, yeah.
In 03 and 04, there's a big drop because, as you may recall, the legislative auditor did a program evaluation and found that leading up to 03, there was a lot of wasteful spending. And so, you know, we were able to, in 04, in fiscal 04 particularly, it's a transition year where we laid off some folks and cut our lease expenses and basically reinvented the lottery and reduced our operating expenses by $9 million to $10 million. And we continue to receive the benefits from that work.
Okay, thank you.
Lottery employment history. Here you see our history. Our current count is 32% lower than in fiscal year 96. We anticipate no change from this level. Bigger picture or better picture of our operating expense items. As with most agencies, our biggest expense is personnel costs. In our case, it's 40% of our operating budget. Lottery salaries and benefits are determined by the same collective bargaining agreement as every other state agency. By law, we can spend no more than 2.75% of revenue on advertising. Our budgeted figure is considerably below this level, approximately 1.7% of our operating expenses. This slide shows our projected revenues for the coming biennium. As I mentioned, the 06 contributions include a one-time $2.2 million with windfall resulting from a legislative reallocation of unclaimed prizes. General Fund is the single greatest beneficiary. total contributions for the biennium will be about $130 million. The Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund will receive about $62 million. Game and Fish Funds will receive $21 million for the biennium. The Natural Resources Fund will receive $21 million as well. Under current law, 45% of this money goes for state parks and trails, another 45% for metro area parks and trails, 6% for local trails, and 4% for the state's three zoos. With that, there's a wealth of information on our webpage, and you'll see which you see the address below. Please feel free to contact me or my staff at any time if you have additional questions. And of course, as always, we would welcome you to collectively or individually tour our offices in Roseville. Thank you very much. I'll open it to questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. I've got a few. You mentioned the $7 million in unclaimed prizes for the current biennium, and that goes back to the general fund, is that correct?
Yeah, currently that's where it goes, yes.
Okay. Sure. And in fact, wasn't there like $1.4 million and an unclaimed one from just recently at some Gopher 6 one that nobody claimed?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we had a Gopher ticket that was sold in January of last year, and nobody claimed it. We have a one-year opportunity for players to collect their prizes, and nobody came forward to claim it. So that became money that will be contributed to the state at the end of this fiscal year.
Now, I've got page 7 in our agency overview. It says unclaimed prizes as it goes by each budget year for that and the projection. Then there's a line that says unclaimed prizes held in trust for the state. There's $2.1 million. I don't quite sure what that means.
I think that was how many years ago? I'm going to let Mr. Feeney, he's my planning director, explain that. It was before my time.
Sure. Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Don Feeney, Research and Planning Director, Minnesota State Lottery. That was earlier in Mr. Harris's testimony, he referred to a one-time windfall in unclaimed prizes. Basically, when the legislature several years ago decided to reallocate where unclaimed prizes went, there was a technical error in the drafting of the bill, and so that the money that was sitting out there could not be turned over. And it was held in escrow for a period of a couple of years until a correction could be made to the law, at which point last fiscal year, there the money came. Of course, that money is no longer there. And
Okay, thank you. One other thing, you indicated you don't get a line item appropriation. For your computer system, does that mean that you just use your existing resources to do that, or how is that working? So I was looking at it says that your computer system lacks vendor support, the phone system is aging. Is that something the state provides for you, or do you use that out of your own funds?
I don't, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's a lottery issue.
Okay, we've got the IT portfolio referring to lottery, so I don't know. Okay. Okay.
My operations director is shaking his head.
There's no IT requests from the state at
all.
Okay. Saying no. All right. Other questions from members on the state lottery? Sir Larson.
Can I ask a policy question, Mr. Chair?
Yes, so.
All right. I'm just curious. I saw in recent days, I think it was the Florida lottery, where a registered sex offender had won the lottery. And already I'd heard on the radio that there was an effort to make certain people ineligible for the lottery in that state. What and it occurred to me that I wondered, in our state statute, do we have any restrictions on folks who can or cannot win or can or cannot play the lottery?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Larson, I don't believe there is.
Boys can't play.
Other than people under the age of 18, there is no one that we can't not award a prize to currently.
Just curious,
Sarah Larson.
Just curious. Thank you.
Anything further? Any other questions? Okay. Well, I believe that concludes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And for members, then just to preview of what we're going to be doing next week. Monday we'll have the investment board, the state investment board, and we'll talk about the retirement accounts, TRA, PERA, MSRS.
And then Wednesday, we're going to be looking at the Amateur Sports Commission, the Campaign Finance Disclosure Board, Administrative Offices, Office of Administrative Hearings. So you can see we're getting into the bigger agencies as we get deeper in the budget process. So anything further? If not, thank you. The meeting's adjourned.